Welcome to this very first edition of Survival Sunday on the Dirt Walker Outdoors podcast. Today I'll be interviewing Ray McKee from Texas Survival School. And I would like for you, if you have an opportunity, to look up www.texassurvivalschool.com and possibly follow along as the podcast goes along with it. Thank you in advance for your attendance today for this very first special edition Survival Sunday on the Dirt Walker Outdoors podcast. Hello, Ray. I'm glad to have you here on this Survival Sunday segment. I've invited you on the show to tell us about yourself, your instructors, and Texas Survival School. Where does it begin? 2013?
It definitely starts in 2013. Appreciate it, RJ, for the invite here. Feel honored to be the first one here. I don't know if you save the best for last and just started with who you could get.
You're in Texas, so you kind of got a little benefit to that because you're right down the road. So I had to go first with a survival school from Texas.
I certainly appreciate it. We're up in the North Dallas area. We started doing classes in 2013, kind of toward the back half of that year. I've been affiliated with the school since the beginning of 2016. And we do classes about every other week in one form or another, whether they're private or open. We run sort of from a September, kind of end of September through the end of May. So we run kind of like traditional school year.
Right. And not during the summer.
Not during the summer. We're out there ourselves a lot of times. But we do, like, we treat the school very much as a labor of love. We all have normal day jobs. And by the time we've done 8, 9, 10 months of a lot of active on the weekends with classes, when summertime rolls around, we're kind of ready for a break ourselves. So we usually take 2 or 3 months off and, you know, do a quick breath and catch our breath and get ready and recharge, and time to do it again when the fall rolls around.
When September comes around, you start with the basic classes. So someone has a chance to go basic, intermediate, advanced in the fall, or is that how it works?
Yeah, we normally start, honestly, COVID kind of messed up our cycle a little bit. So we typically do, obviously, we do far more of the basic classes than anything. It usually takes us 2 or 3 level 1 basic classes to really fill out an intermediate class. And then it usually takes us about 2 intermediates to fill out an advanced class. So we're normally doing those level 3 and 4 classes during the colder part of the year. So we normally do our knife only level 4 class around January, February, and then we'll do a level 3 kind of late spring, but we do one usually right at the end of the year. So it'll either happen typically like late December, early January for the advanced class. So we try to hit a lot of times in those colder months. Mostly because we enjoy cold camping.
That's the best.
And especially in Texas.
Yeah, definitely in Texas. And you require new students to have attended the precursor classes to say advanced or intermediate. You want someone to have taken the class before that. Even if they have some instruction in survival previously, they may not know what you're teaching. And it's probably better if they just begin at your school in the basic class.
You know what? We have let people skip classes here and there, and some of it has been because they've taken a class somewhere else, or they feel like they have a good command of it. If we can come in and we can actually test them on some skills before they go in, you know, we're a little more comfortable letting them skip a class. But we highly, highly, highly recommend they start at the beginning, because I think anytime we've ever let a person skip a class, when they've gotten to that second class or that next one in the order, there have been things that they didn't know that we cover in the previous class. And so in those cases, you know, you're trying to pull them off to the side and catch them up, because, you know, you're not going to rehash stuff in front of the entire rest of the class that they learned in the last one. That's not a good use of their time. And so we strongly, strongly recommend that people start at the beginning and go through. Having said that, yeah, it's happened that on a handful of occasions we've let people skip. They definitely get more out of it if they start at the beginning and go to the end, because it's all too often, there's something that's missing along the way that you can see the glazed look in their eye when all of a sudden they're like, oh, I don't know what they're talking about. And we'll try to pull them to the side at that point and try to get them caught up. But we always start with the caveat of, okay, I understand you're skipping this class because you went to this class over here, or you feel like you know X, Y, and Z because you watched, you know, Naked and Afraid for the last 10 years or whatever. We always start with a caveat of, okay, well, we're going to assume that you know these things. And if you don't, you need to catch us not during the instruction portion, but catch us to the side and we'll try to get you caught up. But there's going to be stuff that you're probably not going to be comfortable with. So,
what should I expect if I show up for the basic class?
You know, probably mass chaos on Friday. Friday afternoon is always a little bit of a play it by ear evening. We try to tell people to start showing up between 5 and 6, and we do that because, like I said, we all have day jobs. And at the same time, we pull students from Oklahoma, Arkansas, and all through Texas. This is where they predominantly come from. But we know that getting across the metroplex of DFW, sometimes it may take you an hour or it may take you 3 hours. So we tell people start showing up around 5 or 6, and that gives us time to get ourselves and get set up so that we can help students, because we get a wide mix of people. You get people who are super comfortable being outside, and you get people who have literally never slept outside and they've never put up a tent. So we have to do a little more helping. And so we start the night a little bit late, typically. And we'll try to cover some orientation of the class and do intros. And we get people from a wide mix of backgrounds. So we get the scouts and we get the hunters and we get the former military dust off, or we get the, hey, I'm going to enlist in 6 months and I want to get a head start. We get the backpackers and hikers, and we get the preppers, and you know, so it's a wide mix of experience. But probably the most fun ones is the parents that are bringing their kid out there, because you know they really like watching Pick a Survival Show, and you can tell it's everybody's first time out there. So we get a lot of first timers too, and so it's a wide mix of experience. So we cover a lot of stuff. We don't necessarily want to know what brought a person into class, because some people aren't really comfortable saying that. But we want to know what they want to learn. And so we'll spend some time on that on Monday night. And then Saturday morning starts early and it's drinking from the fire hose. Our first level class, most of us work with search and rescue in one shape, form, or fashion or another. Our level one class is really built around keeping you dry, keeping you hydrated, keeping you warm, and keeping you from a safety perspective, healthy, and teaching you signaling and land nav and some of that stuff. So it's a lot of material that gets poured into Saturday, and then however long it takes us on Sunday to finish the material. It goes up. Some classes move through the material faster. Some move through slower. It gets harder to squeeze certain things in during the winter because the days get shorter. Saturday is always drinking from the fire hose. And Sunday, we try to slow it down a little bit, but it's always a lot of material. But because of that, we get a lot of people that come back for classes. Whenever you've gone through one of our classes, we always try to tell people, you know, hey, if you've been through our basic class again, we know it's really hard to get all this information in one sitting. If you've been through the class one time and you paid for the class one time, as long as you let us know ahead of time and we have the capacity, you're always welcome to come back and take that class again for free. We want people to absorb. Wow. Kids are always free at our school. Once you've been through class, you can come back again. If the class is already full, we try to not just completely flood it with additional people. But we recognize that it's a lot of material. So we try to break it up. And I know when I started going to the school, I showed up as a student. Coming in, I was really curious to see what all I was going to get out of the first class. And there was a lot of the material that I knew. There was a lot of stuff that I didn't know that I was kind of surprised. But I continued to come back to classes and And I still, I don't know how many of these things I've done at this point. I still learn stuff, you know, because you get the student that comes in. It's like, well, I've always done it this way. You know what? I've never thought about it like that. So even we as, you know, I'm doing air quotes here that you can't see. We, as the instructors, you know, we're still students ourselves. We definitely try not to get lulled into the attitude of we're the expert, because I think we need to all continue to be students. If you ever think you have figured it all out, you're probably missing the boat somewhere.
And you have a lot of instructors at the basic class.
Yeah, we're building a pretty good-sized little family at this point. We were just talking about this the other day. When I first started coming to the school, Eric Giles, who's my partner in the business, he had started the school with a couple of gentlemen. Some had come and gone, and it was he and two other guys. One's still there, one's not. People go different ways. They, you know, the jobs change, and they're occupied on the weekends, or they move away, or things like that. But it was a small little group. You know, it was just two or three people to start with. But we need to do some updating of our website. We've got probably, I'm kind of softballing it, there's probably 10 instructors at this point. And then we've got probably 4, 5, 6 more that we are diligently working to turn them into instructors. Just having a command of the material doesn't mean you can teach. You know, some people are much more natural at teaching and standing in front of people and expressing what needs to happen. And other people take a little more getting comfortable with things. But kind of once you've been through all the classes and, you know, and if you feel like you're a good fit with the camaraderie of the school and you get along well with the other students and we feel like there's a something you bring to the table that we can kind of continue to, you know, water the, you plant the seed and water it and hope it blooms into something good. We kind of continue to bring those people into the fold. And at this point, yeah, we're probably, it's probably easily 15 or 16 of us that at any given point, those people will be out there helping with classes and do hands-on. Because we very much employ the, we're going to explain to you what's going on with this. We're going to show you how to do it. And then we're going to help you do it. So our classes are very hands-on. But by having enough instructors, you know, if you've got a class with, you know, 30, 40, 50 people in it, you're still able to keep your student to teacher ratio at a really good level. And because I'm a firm believer of that, you know, because people learn differently, we all need to be able to teach differently. Some people are more visual, some people are more auditory. And so it's kind of a trade-off. We all learn very differently, so we always teach very differently. And you'll find students that they'll gravitate toward this one person because the way they explain it makes sense to me. And then you know that, all right, hey, when I'm getting ready to teach you how to do knots, I need these 5 or 6 people over here because they're the ones that are clicking with the way I'm teaching. And so we try to make those little mental notes ourselves and we keep going back to our same people. And it definitely helps us deliver what we feel like is a good product.
That sounds very effective to me from an instruction standpoint. When you have that many instructors, a little bit different each one, bringing something different to the students. I just learned this, but I really like that about your school.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that it did not happen quickly. It was a very organic thing. You know, each year you'll have, you know, those, it might be 1 or 5 or 6 people that come through in a year that you can usually tell by about the third class of like, hey, these people are going to be around for a while. Like they're always here when the gates are open. They're always here ready to go. And you can just start to see, and by the time you've come to a couple classes, you really start to get to know the people at that point. We definitely have our own little Texas Survival School family at this point, which is really awesome. A lot of us are transplants here. I started out in South Carolina. Eric started out in California. We joked that we kind of just, you know, ended up right here in the middle. But it's you know, we don't have families here and all that good stuff. We do, but it's our immediate family. We've definitely got a little school family, which is awesome because it's been good.
And of your huge amount of people, really, that take the basic classes, you have about a third return for the intermediate class?
Yeah, it's probably, in the past, it's probably been about a quarter of the people returned. But honestly, in the last probably 2 years, it's probably been closer to about 50% of them. And I don't know how much of that has been the COVID impact. This whole year has been a bit anomalous. You know, we don't really know how much of it is a trend versus how much of it is people just absolutely stir crazy with cabin fever. But so we're kind of excited to see where, you know, the next couple of years go. But it's been closer to about 50% lately. But I think some of that's COVID. But yeah, so we usually have a good batch that comes back for that. And our class sizes, as you move up the levels, we intentionally restrict down the size of the classes. And it usually takes us a couple twos to do a three. Our level three classes are usually around 10 or 12 people. I think not the last one we did. I think it was like eight, but the one before that, I think we had 15 go through it, which was probably the bigger three that we've had. And then when you get to the fours, they get a lot smaller. You're talking a half dozen people at that point. Not too many people are gluttons for punishment like that.
The intermediate class, is it the same length as the basic class, just basically a weekend?
Yeah, they are. They, both of those classes start on Friday evening, and they'll run through midday on Sunday. When you get to our advanced class, we add an additional day on the front of it, so it'll start on Thursday evening, wrap up on Sunday. And then the knife-only class, kind of depends on how the calendar's falling, but it's a 5-day. So we'll add another day to it. Sometimes we do it Monday through Friday. Sometimes we do it, you know, Wednesday through Sunday. It sort of just depends on what the calendar's looking like and who can actually take the time off of work to go do it. And we also try to, you know, if it's something that most of the students are good with any of the dates, but we have this one person that's just really hung up and they can't get off that day, we'll try to shuffle things around a little bit because, you know, we want everybody to be able to partake if they can and want to.
And weather regardless, huh?
Weather regardless. You know, it's hilarious. We have so many people, you know, we'll sign up for classes and we kind of always chalk it up to, you know, we expect to have 6 to 10 people fall out on the class. Like they back out before class starts. And it's, he said, well, it's going to be raining this weekend. It's going to be really cool, or it's going to be hot. And you try to explain to people, it's like, you know, survival doesn't just happen when it's sunny and 75. But again, it's not everyone's comfort zone. And we recognize that. And we reschedule them and we just continue to move forward. But since 2013, we have canceled class twice for weather. Once was this absolute freeze that we had here in North Texas this past winter. And the only reason we canceled it, it wasn't so much about the weather, because honestly, I would have loved to have been out there in it. I thought it was just awesome. It was the fact that everyone was at home dealing with broken pipes. Because it was about the time everything was starting to thaw out. And like, we were just talking internally. It's like, guys, it's like everyone, like at this point, no one has any clue what they're going to be dealing with. Let's just reschedule it and just let people deal with home life first, because that's what's important. And then we'll pick up the class. So we canceled that one. And then outside of that, it's probably been 3 years ago, on a Saturday evening. So we sent them home about 18 hours early, because where we were teaching at the time was in a floodplain. And we had creeks on three sides of the property. And I had literally never seen it flood. But we knew about twice a year it would flood. And it flooded that weekend. We kept watching the creeks and kept watching the creeks. And we sped things up so that we covered the material. They just didn't get as many breaks. So we really hustled through while we were monitoring the rainfall and monitoring the creeks. So we got everybody out just sort of as the next round of lightning storms were starting. And on Saturday afternoon, we decided, hey, let's just stay out here and see what happens. And we left ourselves that night at around midnight, when the creeks had actually gotten so high that they put the fire out at the campfire site. Like, okay, all right, now it's probably time to go, because now I don't even have a dry place to sleep. So at that point, we're having to move hammocks even higher because it was needy where we were camping. The water was getting high enough that the hammocks were probably going to be wet, and we didn't have a dry place to sleep. We do classes regardless. The last two knife-only classes we've done, it snowed during the week. Your non-survival friends look at you and they're like, why are you doing that? I could sit home and stay warm, or I can sit home in the air conditioning. Like, it's fun. Embrace the uncomfortableness of it.
I have a campground I go to here during the winter because I'll be the only one there. And that's why I go there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So the advanced class, you've had some people just not make it through the class.
Yes. Yeah, we've on the advanced class, usually by the time they get to the knife-only class, most people make it through it. Just because by the time they get beyond the third class, they're really dialed in for that fourth knife-only class. The third class is typically where we see the drop-off. And we see, we probably lose 60 to 75. I say lose. It's not like they're dying in the field or anything. 60 to 75% of the people don't make it to the end of that class. And a lot of time, and usually we can pick them out very early in the class. It's the people that you can tell they didn't go home and practice that stuff that we talked about in 1 and 2. We actually had two gentlemen just went through, actually just finished the fourth class. One is a retired Marine, if a Marine ever actually retires, and one retired from the Navy. And, you know, they struggled through three. And it made them well prepared for four, but coming out of it, they were both very upfront with the, hey, you know, we heard you guys say that it gets a lot harder in three. We needed to do X, Y, and Z to be ready for it. And he's like, honestly, we kind of thought you guys were full up. But at the same time, you know, we've had people actually in that exact same class. We had a gentleman come through who's a university dean here in North Texas. And this was very much not in his, I don't think this was really in his wheelhouse, but he learned early on that he really enjoys this stuff. And you can tell he's a great student. He took everything that we talked about in 1 and 2 and he put it into practice and he did his homework. And when he rolled out to 3, he cruised through it. But it's because he was doing all that dirt work that we were telling him ahead of time that, hey, guys, if you're going to do 3 and you're not going to suffer through it, you're really going to blow it out the water and kill it, you've got to be doing these things. He took it home and did it. And it's usually where people fail in it. It's in a couple areas. And most of it comes back to the, I haven't practiced what I needed to practice. You do lose other people for other reasons. We've had a couple fall, you know, I say fall out, but drop out of the class just because they were behind the eight ball on staying hydrated. You know, it's a long time, and some people have a harder time getting over the hump of, wait, I'm just taking all this water out of the creek. I thought I'd be okay with this, but it takes a little funky. It's some people, I think that piece of it surprises them, and we've lost a few for that. And it does get to be more physical. And we've had some people come out there early on and just burn themselves out early. And you can just tell that they, from a calorie perspective, they have a hard time keeping up. So it's usually a mixed bag, but more often than not, it's people that just need to do a little more practicing. A lot of people are very capable of doing it. The youngest person we've had finish it was this past year. He just turned 14, and he came out and killed it like a beast. But he and his younger brother grown up at our school. I mean, I started in early 16. They started probably fall of 16. It's two brothers. One's 11 now. He's almost 12. I think he just turned 12. And the other one just turned 14. And they've been coming to class since they were little enough that actually the first few times they were there, they kept climbing this one tree beside us and actually hung a swing in it so they would hopefully stop climbing. And then they just swung on the swing. But they grew up in the class, which is awesome. We always strongly encourage parents to bring the kids out. And that's why most of us are involved in school, because it's, you know, we're parents and we think that all too often the kids are, you know, like mine. I've got a 14-year-old down there myself, and not saying 14-year-old. If I had to put money on it, I'm pretty sure he's sitting on the computer right now because I haven't heard him lately. But, you know, we want to encourage kids to come out there, which is why kids are always free at our school. We want parents to bring them out there, and we want kids to come out and learn something that we think too many kids now, or and even adults now at this point, don't learn these things. They don't get to experience the outdoors. If you look, you know, the enrollment in Scouts, I mean, it's constantly going down. Kids are having fewer and fewer avenues to be exposed to these things. And we are thrilled to have those kids continue to come out and experience class and actually really enjoy it. We've had some super kids come through.
What would be your minimum aid for a kid to attend himself or herself without a parent?
There have been kids that we have allowed to come out without their parents. But it's kids like these, this situation where we know these boys and we know these parents and these kids are serious about it. We do not look at it like it's daycare. Had classes in the past where if your kid is out, and by kid, I mean a minor, they're supposed to be accompanied by an adult. Now, that might be a scout master bringing in five kids, or it might be a parent coming out. We're fine either way, but we want someone responsible for that child there for that class, with only a handful of exceptions. And it's because, you know, we're busy enough with the classes and teaching that if that child isn't dialed in and paying attention, we can't be chasing a kid all over the school. We've dealt with that once or twice. And general rule of thumb, there needs to be an adult with the kid.
So what we're saying is, if I'm 16 years old, I'm listening to you right now, I'm interested in your school, looking at your website, TexasSurvivalSchool.com, and I want to go to your class, I need to get mom or dad or Uncle Randy or somebody to go with me.
We have had parents come out and not partake of the class, but literally just hang out and just there to kind of mind the kid. We have had, we actually had this past year, two mid-teens kids come out and took the class. The parents stayed in a hotel down the street for their own reasons, didn't want to participate in the class, but the kids were just really eager to do it. And we let the kids go through, but you know, mom and dad were close by, and it was all couched with the caveat of, we'll let them go through by themselves, but if somebody needs to come get the kids, you need to be close by so we can call you and you can come get the kids. Because what we don't want to do is have that kid that doesn't really want to be there and then be a distraction to everybody else.
That's exactly what that would be, yeah.
Correct. And those kids were awesome. They had a ball, and you know, we look forward to having them back. But again, they've come a couple times at this point. But then we've had, you know, the ones that mom or dad decided they needed to come out, and they just really didn't want to be here, and it was a distraction. We don't want to detract from everyone else's experience just because someone didn't want to be there.
I've had those kind of kids in scouts before. It can really be an anchor on what you can do.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is, if someone's looking at your website and they're thinking about your classes and they're new to any of the outdoor scene or anything like that, you have gear pages with suggestions on what they would want to bring. Well, you have gear lists, I know, for the classes, but you also have gear pages on the website with suggestions you're not getting paid for, just to show people that maybe that Mossy Oak knife from Walmart might not be the best choice, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, we often get a lot of questions on gear because a lot of people are new to this. I field questions all year long on, hey, I'm trying to figure out what kind of knife do I need, or I see this metal container, like, what are you really looking for with this? We strongly try to encourage people not to have to spend a bunch of money on gear up front, because part of what we talk about in the level one class is the gear and you know, the knife. Everybody always wants to know what you know, what's the perfect knife. Yeah, it's like asking somebody what's the perfect screwdriver. You know, it's a tool, and they've all got their own purposes. And so we try to put some items out there that everything that you see on our gear recommendation page, one, we don't get paid for any of it. We try our best not to sell stuff. We're trying to teach people, and we're not trying to sell them the next, you know, whatever Texas Survival stamped piece of merchandise is. So we put gear recommendations out there. That's all stuff that we've used and used frequently. And we feel like it's, one, it's a wide range of prices. Some people can spend more money for gear, some people can't. So we try to put wide ranges of stuff out there. There's also stuff that we've used ourselves and been really successful and pleased with, and try to pass that on to the students. You know, hey, yeah, I've bought 10 of these things and I've broken 9 of them. this one has served me really well. It's that one I'm going to put on the website. So we try to put stuff out there that people can depend on.
Along with that knife talk, you have a one-day knife sharpening class, which I find incredible.
Yeah, we try to do some half-day classes here and there, or single-day classes, meaning just not overnight, especially during the warmer months when things are a little bit slower for us. And that's one of those areas that I'm always surprised at how many people show up for class, and you can tell pretty fast that their knives are super dull. And, you know, we're a firm believer in a dull knife is a dangerous knife. And so we spend a lot of time sitting around the campfire during our normal basic class sharpening people's knives. We're all out there with sharpening stones ourselves during that class. And so we kind of thought about it, like, well, you know, we should probably offer like a knife sharpening class. Yeah, so that's one of those that kind of always surprises me. But I don't know. I enjoy sharpening my knives when I get home from class. And every time I use them, I'm sharpening them. And I just sort of function on that. You mean everybody else doesn't do this?
I saw that earlier, and I just think that's incredible. But also you have other half day, as you call it, or just single day classes, first aid, I think.
Yeah, we haven't actually offered that one yet. It's on the docket. We were going to do it this summer, and then my partner decided to, have a baby and all of that stuff this summer. And it kind of reset our schedule a bit. So yeah, we're going to stand that one back up. It's just a standalone first aid class. And we've got several classes that we've got queued up for the hopper coming in behind it that we're going to start introducing in our normal basic classes this fall as sort of optional Friday evening classes to help keep people entertained, because we don't want to start class until everyone's there. So we'll do some mini classes on Friday evenings starting this year, and to start rolling in and introducing some of those to flesh those out to be full day classes for the coming summer. And so we've got several exciting ones out there that I think people are going to really enjoy.
And you do private classes or instruction away from the school or at the school for businesses or groups?
Yeah, we do a good little bit. When we set our schedule that gets published on the website, we usually hit 1 to 2 weeks per year. But by the time it all shakes out, we space them out to allow room for private classes. I think the last five weeks, I did 7 or either 8 classes. So, sometimes it's out in different communities. Sometimes it's a hiking group somewhere. Sometimes it's, a scout pack that's trying to do things. So we try to keep the calendar pseudo open so that we can kind of continue to flex around as those pop up. And so we stay pretty busy.
And you started the Primitive Bushcraft 101.
Yes, absolutely. So we view our classes kind of in two tracks. We have that pure survival track that, it starts out as being that keep me safe for 72 hours, teach me signaling, first aid, and fire, and water, and shelter, and land nav. And then as you move through the progression of classes, we start to introduce more and more of that bushcraft approach to things, and you're losing more and more gear. So you're having to compensate for it with technique. But we do function on the philosophy that, if I'm having to fall back on that, I've made a lot of mistakes along the way. They're great skills to know. I don't knock those skills in any way, shape, form, or fashion, but I shouldn't have to be napping a knife and, hand drilling and making cordage in the field. And it's great to know how to do that. I shouldn't, from a survival perspective, I shouldn't have to be doing those things. But we start to layer in those bushcraft techniques. But what we were starting to find was we had a lot of people that were very interested in the hobby craft of bushcraft. And they were less interested in the survival piece, but just, I think some of us, because of the television programs, they just were really getting into the primitive approach to it all. And we kept getting inquiries for people who wanted to do just a class of just that. So we took a lot of the material that comes through our normal survival track that we introduced through, and then we layered in a bunch of other stuff to fill a good full weekend. And that's been our sort of basic bushcraft class. And I don't know, we've done those five or six times at this point, I think, because we've really only done them for the last 2 years. And then we're trying to figure out with them what that Bushcraft 2 class is. And so we've been testing the waters with everyone of what do they want to see in a next level Bushcraft class. And we haven't really come to a consensus yet what that second class looks like. We're still working on it. I mean, just having a hard time getting the students to settle in, because we're always, our class changes constantly. At the end of every class, we sit everyone down. What did you like? What did you not like? You know, what can we do better? And our class changes. The people that come back to our class time and time again, they see the class evolve and mature. It's almost different every time you come back. And the Bushcraft class, we're addressing it the same way, but we're having a really hard time figuring out what it is that people are interested in, because you'll get two people that, you know, I'd love to spend like a half day learning about tanning hides. Or, you know, I'm really into the flint mapping, or I'm really into the pick a subject. And we haven't really figured out what the second class looks like yet. It's on the docket. It'd
be difficult to make out a curriculum for that.
It really is, because, you know, it's all of the subjects get so involved, and most of that stuff you can't teach in a weekend to get really down into the weeds of it. So then no it way. Starts getting into Yeah, you can just kind of introduce it to people when you start getting into that deeper stuff. And I think that's where some people, they kind of have the impression that, oh, I can come out here and I can be a bushcraft ninja in a weekend. And you really can't. You know, it takes the dirt time. It takes the spending the hours out doing it and really working on your craft. I did a private fire class for a young lady a while back. She'd been to some other schools, and she's like, I just didn't get bow drill. She's like, will you just teach me bow drill? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Come in. And so she showed up at the house, and we did several hours out in my garage bow drilling, and from beginning to end. And she was just shocked. It just, all right, wow, this is a lot harder than I thought it was. It's like when you learn how to do it, it's really not hard. But, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of bow drill fires I've lit at this point. It's just one of those things that it's the epitome of practice makes perfect. Not that I'm perfect at anything. My wife will remind us of that. I just heard of you in the next room. but it's it's one of those things. It just takes doing it, and anything worth doing is worth putting in the time for. So.
Mentioning your wife, you mentioned in a previous conversation, you usually also have some female instructors on site during the classes.
Absolutely. Because when I showed up at the school for the first class, like I said, it was all military. And I had no idea what to expect walking into class. And I actually intentionally left my wife and son at home. And I told them, I was like, I don't really know what I'm expecting here. I'm just going to go see what this is. And honestly, I grew up in the country, but I've lived in the city for the last 20 years. And I was just looking for a way to get outside. And I did what a lot of people do. I went out in Google and typed in Texas Survival Schools. Oddly enough, Texas Survival School popped up in there, and they were right down the road. But the thing that I was so overly impressed with was right out of the gate, it didn't feel like I was going to boot camp. It was clearly a very family-oriented atmosphere. And that's something that we've continued to enhance. And that's really our focus, because we're not trying to run boot camp. We're not trying to sell a bunch of stuff. We're trying to educate families on stuff that we feel like they don't learn or don't learn often enough. And so our classes were pretty much any given class, we're probably 20-25% kids. And we're pretty close to about, well, I say this, some classes we're about 50-50 men versus ladies. Other classes you'll have more men, other classes you'll have more ladies. But we always have, there's four or five ladies that are constantly showing up that are instructors in training somewhere in that. They're in that family of us that they're out there helping and they're out there teaching techniques. And it helps, I think, make it more comfortable for ladies to come out to class. I think it makes them a little more approachable. And having our kids out there, I think it makes it easier for the other kids to come out here and kind of feel comfortable. They see our kids asking questions and participating, and it means it's a little easier for them to do it. And it is a family. It's our school family. And you know, because of that, our families are involved.
your school and all of you, even with you having other day jobs, of course, but you're also respected and received well by the local community, even to the point that Roy City gives the school awards.
Yeah, we've gotten that a couple times now. It's always nice to be recognized for something. It's always a surprise when they pop up, because we, like I said, this is a labor of love. We don't really look at that outside stuff. We don't do a lot of marketing. So we always work on the assumption that no one knows we're out there. So then when all of a sudden something pops up and they do recognize us, or, you know, a magazine calls to do an ad, or, you know, the news people called because they want to do a spot on us, or, you know, hey, our local podcaster calls and wants to do an interview. It's always a surprise for us when it pops up, because we just sort of work on the assumption that we're just, you know, in our own little world and no one knows we're here. But no, we're always grateful.
I don't think you're in a position that no one knows you're there anymore, because you're pretty easy to find on the internet. Like you said, if you punch in Texas Survival, it's going to come up pretty fast. So see here. I think that covers a lot about the school. What do you think your plans might be for the future? I know you're the co-owner. You have a lot of instructors coming in. You don't really want to grow very much necessarily, because you got to keep those class sizes to a manageable level. And you don't want to overload what instructors you have with too many classes and so forth.
Right.
See any growth, or are you just really happy with what's going on and you just want to perfect it?
You know, we're always happy to do more, which is the reason we stay as busy as we do, because we have a hard time saying no. And having more hands at the table at this point makes it a lot easier to do more classes, because it's not dependent on the same three people showing up every week, time in and time out. We want to be able to offer as many classes as we can, but at the same quality level that we want to do. So we're really trying to do it very organically and trying to bring people along and build them into good instructors. And it's just not something that happens overnight. We'd like to offer more classes and maybe some different locations, and looking at kind of fleshing things out and also offering additional classes of different content. We're always looking for, you know, what's the next piece that we can offer to someone. And it's all based on what people ask us questions about while we're in class. You know, we get people that, and that's where a lot of those one day classes come from. You know, the things like that that pop up, like the knife sharpening. It's one of those things that when we have enough inquiries about it, somewhere along the way, the idea fairy comes by and visits, and we have that epiphany of, hey, we should teach this in the class. And so the more hands we have helping out, the easier it is to do that stuff with it not being just absolutely exhausting. We've had a really good balance lately. This year has been very anomalous because of COVID. We've been as busy. We've actually been busier than we've ever been the last 18 months. I think a lot of it's cabin fever. But at the same time, you know, you look at the state park bookings, and you look at, you know, the federal parks, national parks, and you know, look at their bookings, and people are they're getting outside more. And so we're hoping that, you know, this is a trend that people will start enjoying the outside more than what they have historically. But then kind of what comes along sort of hand in hand with that, and again, a lot of us do work with search and rescue. You get more people out in nature, you get more people in trouble, where you don't have to look too hard almost on any given day. You can find where a hiker or a backpacker has gotten in trouble somewhere, and you know, you hope they've been found safely. All too often they don't. So it's one of those things where I think there's a spot for plenty of stuff going forward to be talked. We're curious to see just how the enrollment trends continue going forward, and we hope people stay outside, but we also hope they stay safe while they're doing it.
And you'll probably end up with more instructors.
Yes, we certainly hope so. The two young gentlemen that I was talked about earlier, they are in a heated brotherly battle to see who can be the youngest instructor. Given that one's 12 and one's 14, I think the odds are in favor of the 12-year-old, because he's knocking on the door of the 14-year-old. So
that'll be great. That'll also help you with some of the parents when they look at bringing their child or sending their mid to late teenage son or daughter to the school. They might feel more comfortable with a peer instruction.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, we've tried really hard to make sure it's a very inviting to the family environment. I think we've hit a good stride with it. We've been feeling really good about it. We've hit a good balance, and we have a good cadre of people helping, and everyone's very capable. And you know, one, we all thoroughly enjoy one another's company, which makes it all easier. We're all genuinely friends and family. And that goes a long way.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's a dynamic you can't pay for right there.
Correct. And it's just one of those things that happens organically. You can't really force it to happen. And it's taken us a long time to get where we are, but it's a good spot once you sort of finally get there. And it just continues. It is infectious. It does continue and continues to grow as we all evolve and mature and the school along with us.
I am going to personally invite anyone listening, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, or wherever they may be, maybe New Mexico, to look at your website, TexasSurvivalSchool.com. That's really easy to find. It's a great looking website, even though you say it needs some updates. And there is quite a bit of information there on the site. And maybe attend some of your classes.
Absolutely. Look us up on Facebook. We're equally as easy to find out there. There's a business page and a group, Texas Survival School. We constantly feed it with articles. You know, some of it's gear articles, some of it's, you know, techniques, some of it's, you know, lost hikers and things that's going on in the industry. And we do, you know, post the pictures from the classes out there. We post upcoming classes. We try to stay really active on it. We do some other areas. We dabble with Instagram and all that fun stuff, but we haven't really been as active with it as we should. For my day job, I'm on a computer all day, and sometimes I have to really force myself to do it when I'm not, quote unquote, working. I don't really do the personal Facebook and all that stuff. I only had an account because they kept yelling at me because I would have to send them all my pictures from the class and someone else would have to post them. But I have an account to post pictures. That's about it. But no, we do post a lot of stuff out there. And again, we just try to create that, you know, family communication train and trail and try to fold everyone into the family here. So,
well, that's how I found you. So that works out well for you.
I'm glad to hear it worked.
And this has been a great interview today. I hope everyone will look further at what you have to offer and enjoyed the podcast today. And I'm really excited to have someone from Texas on the first Survival Sunday segment here. That was kind of important to me because I watch all these other people all over the world, but I really wanted someone from Texas to be this the first bias reason, if I can call it that. So I really appreciate you coming to talk with us today. And I think it's been great. Maybe we'll have you or one of the other instructors on later on down the road. We'll talk about something else.
Perfect. Anytime. Just let us know. We appreciate the offer out. And don't feel too guilty about it. There's nothing wrong with being Texas proud.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Even if we didn't start out here, we're all biased when we get here.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Until next time, I'm going to let you go for today, and we'll talk to you again.
Sounds good. Thanks, RJ.
Friends, once again, that was Ray McKee from Texas Survival School, www.texassurvivalschool.com. Check out the website or find Texas Survival School on Facebook. See what they have to offer. Sign up for a few classes. I think after this podcast, it might be evident to you that Texas Survival School seems like a great place for instruction. And also, look forward to the next Survival Sunday episode. See more about the podcast on www.dirtwalkeroutdoors.com or follow Dirt Walker Outdoors and Survival on Facebook. Please also listen for our Adventure Seekers segment weekly, as well as Trail Talk coming to you now starting this week. Thank you again for listening to the Dirt Walker Outdoors podcast. This is Dirt Walker, off trail.